Okay, good afternoon. Thank you, as always, to the Froelich Financial Group for their generous sponsorship of our men's afternoon kollel. In addition, I want to thank today's sponsor, Phil Zimmerman, in memory of his wife, Peggy Zimmerman, Fega Bas Moshe HaKohen, very special woman whose neshama should have an aliyah. We're grateful for your sponsorship. Okay, we're picking up where we left off last week. We did part one last week of this question of bribery and cutting lines using protectia. And just to give a quick review for those who were not here of what we covered and where we left off. We talked about what precipitated this was the scandal that existed that began early this year. Colleges and universities in which it turned out parents were bribing admissions officers, athletic directors, to let their children in. We saw several articles, we won't revisit, but that talked about what is morally, what's the difference between smearing the acceptance person, the application admissions officer, and naming the library, naming the gymnasium. In both cases, you're giving money in order to help someone cut a line. And the bottom line is, while it seems to the violator there's no injured party, there is an injured party. I.e., the one who didn't get into the university who had greater merit. That's the injured party, because they didn't get in, even though they deserve to get in much, much more. So what morally is the difference between bribing the individual or the university? Maybe the difference is, in the one case, the university as a whole gains, as opposed to the private individual who pockets that money and gains themselves. We saw this is not something unique to universities. We saw it happens in yeshiva programs in the year in the reverse direction, where admissions, those who were representing yeshivas in Israel, were bribing the Israel guidance people of yeshiva high schools to send the best students to them. Again, injured parties are those who are not going where they should be going, or those who deserve to get in. Rav Steinman Zatzal spoke about the issue of protectia within government agencies, where a person was appointed for a position in Israel and then found out that the offer had been withdrawn because someone with a greater protectia got it instead. And we spoke about Rav Steinman's judgment that that was something which is immoral, incorrect, and against halacha. And then lastly, we talked about it in the context of Big Pharma, who spend $24 billion with a B dollars a year to market not to the public, not to patients who need their drug, but to doctors trying to influence their prescribing their drug, which is 8 times more than they spend on advertising and marketing to the patients directly themselves. So that took us into the topic of shochad. We had 4 psukim that addressed the issue of shochad. Shochad, bribery, has the ability to blind. One pasuk described it blinds yavir pikhim, people who are otherwise clear-sighted, intelligent, clear-minded, good judgment. And another pasuk that says, Hashochad ya'aver enei chachamim, even chachamim, even those who are wise can't help but be blinded. The Gemara said the word shochad, the etymology of the word shochad itself is shehu chad, that you and the one who bribed you become one. They've now invested in you, they've given something to you, and you see yourself as an extension of them, and therefore, showing favor to them is really showing favor to yourself. Those are the mechanics. That is how bribery works, and therefore why it is so pernicious, why it is so dangerous. Not only, as we saw the Gemara said, when it in fact clouds our judgment, when it redirects our judgment, but even when it seems to not have an impact on our judgment, if we nevertheless come to the same conclusion we would have even without the bribe, it is still something that remains prohibited. We then turned over to the world of lines, of what are the rules and what are the ethics of waiting on line, which is where we're going to pick up right now. The Gemara talked about tzedek tzedek, it appears twice, tzedek tzedek tirdof. When there are two boats that are in line, what order do you go in? And even before that, the Rambam says not only the one who paid the bribe, the one who received the bribe is violating the prohibition of lifnei iver lo sitein mechshol. The Sharei Tshuva, Rabbeinu Yona, says that you're violating the will of Hashem. And the Sfas Emes interpreted, you're not done din emes la'amito. Done din emes la'amito means to come to the correct conclusion, but for the correct reason. Tzedek tzedek. You have to use righteous means to achieve righteous results. And similarly, you have to be done din emes, you have to come to the just and correct conclusion, but it has to be la'amito. The signature of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is emes. We have to come to the right conclusion because that is consistent with the will of Hashem. Does this prohibition of bribery apply to non-Jews? According to the Ramban, we saw it does. It is part of the halacha of dinim, one of the seven Noahide laws, that non-Jews also have to set up a judicial system in a court. Chazanish said that the prohibition of bribery is a chok, not a mishpat, and he proved that from the fact that in situations, even though we are clearly biased, i.e. the shochet who shechting about his own shechita, who's paskening about his own shechita, the rav who paskens about his wife's own taras ha-mishpacha shaylas, one is biased in those cases, clearly in regeb adavar, they're bribed, so to say, by the conclusion and the outcome they want, nevertheless, they're trustworthy. You see, therefore, said the Chazanish, it is a chok, not a mishpat. Which led us up to page 10, which is where we last left off last week. And page 10 then with this question, this other interpretation of tzedek, tzedek, tirdof. And the two tzedek is din and pshara, exact justice, and the tzedek, the righteousness of compromise. Compromise is not unrighteous. A compromise is not against what is just. A compromise is a form of justice. A compromise we defined as when neither party is happy with, but both parties can live with. That is the halachic definition of a compromise. Neither, it's the definition in general. Neither party is happy about, but both parties can live with. And the Gemara talked about this compromise. Two people pull into a four-way stop sign at the same time. Two boats come and they're trying to pass through a narrow passageway. What is the hierarchy? What is the priority? What is the rule that governs who goes first? So the Gemara said, if one has more passengers than the other, if one has a heavier load than the other, if one has come a further distance than the other, has priority. And what if they are equal? They have the same number of passengers, and they've come the same distance, and they have the same weight of the load they're carrying. The Gemara said, that's when one imposes a pshara. You have to come to a compromise. One defers to the other, and the one that was got to go first rewards the one who allowed them to go. And you, in the spirit, you reach that compromise. That's a form of tzedek. The Meiri in source 14 expanded the definition. And if you remember, the Meiri said, not only do we have the variables or criteria the Gemara said, how many passengers, what order they got there, how far they came, but here are also in the hierarchy the rules of waiting online. And he says, a orphan comes before a widow, and a widow before a talmid chacham, and a talmid chacham before a balabas, and a woman before a man. Not everyone is created equal on a line. That the old American saying, first come, first serve, is not a halachic principle. We do not subscribe to first come, first serve, but we look around in that room and who's on that line, and we form the line based on identity and based on status. That's what the Meiri expanded the definition, bless you, of the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Okay, so this is what we're really up to. Ksubas Kuf Vav on the top of page 11. Source number 16. Amarava. Sharle Tzurba Mirabana Lamemar Tzurba Mirabana Ana. Sharle Tigray Beresha. A Talmid Chacham is allowed to say, Talmid Chacham can get to the line at the ATM machine. Talmid Chacham can get to the line at the Purim Carnival. Talmid Chacham can get to the line on the way into the Hanukkah concert. A Talmid Chacham can get to the line at the gate onto JetBlue, Fort Lauderdale to JFK, which is filled, as we said last week, everyone on the way there needs a wheelchair, and the miracle in the sky, blue chips and Diet Pepsi, and when you land, all of a sudden everyone's been healed. All the people who needed the wheelchair at the gate to go, if it means having to wait on the plane to get off, all of a sudden, miraculously, they've been healed. So if you have a problem with your hip or your knee or your ankle, just book a flight to New York, and you'll need the wheelchair on the way there. But miraculously in the sky, you'll heal and you'll be able to run to baggage claim and get off the plane. It's mamish, it's geschmack, it's something to see. So the Talmid Chacham comes to any of these lines we just described, and the Talmid Chacham says, if you'll excuse me, I'd like to go first. And the Gemara in Ksubas seems to support the Talmid Chacham's right to be able to do that. Talmid Chacham can claim, Tzurba Mirabonan Ana, you're just an Oisvarif Amaaretz. Ich bin a Talmid Chacham. So therefore, you wait. You have nothing better to do. If you're not waiting online, you're just going to be, you know, reading the National Enquirer or watching Netflix anyway. I'm a Talmid Chacham. If I have to wait online, do you know how much Torah will be lost? My time is more valuable. And therefore, the Talmid Chacham can cut the line. The Gemara in Adarim, source 17. Ravula Bereda Rav Eloi Avalei Dina Kamed Rav Nachman Shalach Rav Yosef Ula Chavareinu Amisa Betorah of Mitzvos Amal Amai Shalach Lehanufei Hador Amal Amishra Betigra. What are you going to flatter him? You're going simply to admire him, to say great things about him? So no, Rav Yosef asked to be moved to the head of the line. Why? Because Talmud Chacham. So what right does the Talmud Chacham have to advance in the line? This does not seem to me to be a type of behavior that will promote a love of Torah and a love of Rabbonim and Talmud Chacham. This does not seem to me to be a great strategy towards Kiddush Hashem. Talmidei Chachamim around the world cutting lines and arguing that their time is more valuable than others. So where does it come from? So Rashi says, source 18, Shorli Tigro, Higdimu Dinei L'Shel Achirim, B'Shvil Kavod Torasi. Zogt Rashi, it's a din in Kavod HaTorah. We know that Torah, Kehem Chayinu V'Orach Yameinu, Torah is the blueprint of creation. Torah, V'Yigisa B'Yom V'Alayla, the most valuable activity, Talmud Torah, Keneged Kulam. We put Talmud Torah, those who study Torah, on a pedestal. So the right, the license to argue you can cut the line is not because you, the individual, deserve any honor or kavod, but the Torah you represent. So says the Talmud Chacham, it's not me. Who am I? I'm a nothing. But, you know how many times I finish Shas? Nice, you learned the daf and you finished one cycle. I know the daf. I wrote the daf. I wrote the commentary on the daf. I am the daf. So therefore, not for me, says Rav Yosef, but for the Torah that I represent and I stand for, says Rashi, it's a din in kavod ha-Torah. The Rosh source 19, Tigray Beresha, Piskuli dinai kideshalo is batal milimudai. Because no, the Talmud Chacham is actually arguing that there is a value that we place on how we spend our time. So the person who's going to be late to their golf game, their Mahjong game, to the early bird special, so you wait online, you'll catch the next round of Mahjong, you'll play golf tomorrow, you'll make it to the regular dinner, cost you a few more dollars, you get to pay with credit card, you'll make it, you'll survive. But me, if I'm waiting online, I'm wasting time. I could be poring over Talmud Torah. And therefore, all time is not equal. Taka, some people's time is more valuable than others in how you use the time. And by the way, you also want to cut the line? Become a Talmud Chacham. Spend more time learning Torah, and your time will be as valuable as other Talmidei Chachamim. So you have the time of Talmidei Chachamim, which is deemed to be very valuable, and then you have everybody else. That's how the Rosh understands why the Gemara is suggesting it is permissible to manipulate the line the Talmud Chacham can say, I can cut. Tosfos, source number 20, Shavuos. Says Tosfos, Kishabu, Shnei Dinim Bebas Achas, Dim Ba Dinach, Hatchila Tzarech Lakdimo, Kedamrinim Besanhedrin, Kekotin Kegadol Tishmon. Inami, also the Kavod HaTorah, Odu, Kedamrinim Perik Basra, Diksubas. Says Tosfos, if the Amoritz got on the line first, Talmud Chacham has to wait in line like everyone else. Your time is no more valuable. There's nothing so special about you. What is the Gemara saying when he says, I get to go first, is what? When they get there together. So if there are no other reasons to determine who should go first, all else is equal. And there's a stalemate. Two people show up at exactly the same time. And each one's holding the door. You go first. Who should go? I go first. So that's when the Gemara comes and says, the Talmud Chacham goes first. When all else is equal, when they show up at the same time, if there's no other reason such as having been there first, then the Talmud Chacham goes first. But otherwise, no, all are equal, they get there the same time. So Rashi, the Rosh Tosos, a three-way machlokes Rishonim, what did the Gemara mean when it says, both in Ksubas and Nedarim, that a Talmud Chacham can cut a line? How do we paskin? Source number 21, Shulchan Aruch Hoshin Mishpat Siman Tezvav. Tzorach adayin shiyaktim ladan adin shabalafan of tchila. Aval tzorach lahaktim shal Talmud Chacham afilu balav asof. V'chein mitzvah lov lahapich b'schuso mashayachol. Shulchan Aruch says the following. The rule of a din Torah of a Beis Din has a waiting room. And in that waiting room, you follow first come, first serve, whatever order they got there, with the exception of Talmud Chacham. Talmud Chacham had a din Torah, which apparently is not a stira mina yubei, but the Talmud Chacham had a din Torah, and even if they arrived last to the waiting room, they took the last number out of the number thing, but still, the Talmud Chacham goes first, and a person, it's a mitzvah, to try to argue, to try to search, to try to defend the merit of the Talmud Chacham, to exonerate, or to be able to see the their position as being favorable. So the Shulchan Aruch seems to record, not like Tosfos, in terms of it only applies when you get to the same time. Shulchan Aruch seems to paskin like Rashi and the Rush, that it's a din either in Kavod HaTorah, or it's a din in not wasting their time. But Taka the Talmud Chacham goes first. The Rambam also addresses this in Hilchos Sanhedrin. The Rambam in source 22, Ayu Lefanav, Ayu Lefnei Adayanim, Baalei Din Harbei, Magdim Ez Din Ayasum Adin Almana. The Rambam codifies what the Meiri had said, that the orphan comes before the widow. Shenamar Shaftu Yasum Riba Almana. And the widow goes before the Talmud Chacham. If he's Taka Talmud Chacham, he should say to the widow, please, you go first, you've been through enough. For the woman, it's embarrassing, it's shameful. She's sitting there, there's a Din Torah, it's uncomfortable, she's anxious. So you, women first. It's menschlichkeit, it's common courtesy. A woman goes before the men. This is what the Rambam writes. And by the way, it's not a pal, I'm saying this to a room full of men. But when the Rambam writes this in medieval times, in wherever it was, Spain, Egypt, in Tzfas, he wasn't writing it as apologetics. Women go first, we have a courtesy to the women, it's menschlichkeit and derech eretz. He was not confronting the feminist movement of Cairo. He was not responding to the orthodox feminists of Tzfat. When the Rambam writes this, is because this is what Torah means, this is what Torah represents. Our sacred sages, both the Tanaim and Amoraim, through the Rishonim, were writing when they described the attitude we have to have in putting women on a pedestal. They were writing in a time where women were objects. They were property. They were chattel. And yet, never for the Torah. For the Torah, the Ketubah was instituted to defend a woman, to make sure she was provided for financially. The responsibilities that the rabbis enacted in order to ensure that a woman had what she needed. The obligation of loving and of setting aside finances. Or here's an example. The Rambam says, you have a waiting through room, and the Gadol HaDor, the Rosh Hashiva, the biggest Talmud Chacham, sitting there. But there's a woman, she goes first. The job of the Rosh Hashiva, the Talmud Chacham, is to say to the woman, you go first. So how do we paskin halacha lemaisa? We saw the Gemaras, we saw the Rishonim, we saw even the Shulchan Aruch. But is the Shulchan Aruch the final word? Listen to what Rav Sternbach has to say. Source 23. Im Talmud Chacham mechakeh sheyesh lo din kedima midin Torah, lechora pashat shemutol lo lahakdim es atzma batur. The Talmud Chacham, it's clear from everything we saw, may insert himself into the line. Not behind the line, not at the back of the line, can cut the line. Aval nira shemitzvah zu ala tzibur hi mutelas, lechabi Talmud Chacham lezokin. On the mitzido, roy lo Talmud Chacham l'shtadel shelo lahatriach latzibur. So you get out of Mincha, Shabbos, and by the time you get down from the Bima, so many people have chewed off your ear that when you get into Shalosh Shittos, there's a long line to wash for Shalosh Shittos. So what's the halacha? Can the Talmud Chacham, assuming, not necessarily a fair assumption, that the rabbi is also a Talmud Chacham, can he say, look, Talmud Chacham, you saved me this seat. I sit at the head table. So I'm going to cut the line. I don't want to wait with everybody else. So Rav Sternbach says what I think is very sagacious advice. He says the job of the Talmud Chacham is to say, I wait in line like everybody else. I'm in the back of the line, first come, first serve. And the job of the tzibur is to say, Talmud Chacham, covered our Rav. So forget the Rav. Let's say you're hosting Rav Shechter for Shabbos. Part of our Beis Medrash program this Shabbos, we're having Rav Rosner, Rav Shalom Rosner. We're very excited to be able to welcome Rabbi Eli Bell's on this past Shabbos. But Rav Asher Weiss in March, we had Rav Shechter. Baruch Hashem, we have great Talmidei Chachamim. So their job, and I could tell you with certainty about all of them, none of them would cut a line. All of them would insist that they wait in line like everybody else. That's their job. Our job is to say, no, 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 no. We insist. None of us are washing until you wash. You go first. We could go in the Yachlin so about official matriarch come up in Machonis Veloba autobus, Shane Tsar Shatsiber Yoser, Yvaser Yvater Lechvodo, Royal Alasas Kane. Avam Loasa Kane Venimsa Batur, Kol Magdimo Makai Mitzah Selechabe Tamachochem, Shishoro Rav Ma'od. The Chayavan Magdimo. The Tamachochem should even go out of their way to try to avoid a situation where someone will feel they have to let him go first. The Tamachochem should anticipate and be ready and try to develop a scenario where they don't have to rely on anyone giving them preferential treatment, because as I said, I don't know anyone ever became frum because they saw someone insist that they were a Talmud Chacham and they got to cut the line. I never saw that as a kirov method. So you remember, may recall, when we learned Kedushin last year, 2 years ago, in the afternoon kolo, and we did the sugya of Adarta Pnei Zakein, the obligation of standing for an older person, Zeshekana Chachma. Are you standing for the Torah? Are you standing for the age, the longevity, the wisdom they've achieved through life? So we said that's a halacha, that even a non-Tamma Chacham Zakein, you have to show honor. You stand up on the bus. You stand up at the shir, there's no chairs left. You have to stand up for such a person. The question is, do you have to let them cut the line? Standing up for a person doesn't cost you anything. Letting them cut the line costs you something. Why? Because another American colloquialism is, time is money. Time is money. So if I let you cut the line when I've been waiting here all this time, time is money. And therefore now it's costing me money. So to allow a zakein who's not a Talmid Chacham to cost me money, that covered, I'm not obligated in Chesaron and Kiss. I don't have to lose money for it. So Rav Sternbach is not so sure that you have to allow the older person who's not the Talmid Chacham to cut the line. I hope that's a shaila that's in the abstract. I hope any normal person would let the older person, before they fire them on Shas, would let them just cut in front of them, because an older person deserves, through what they've lived in life and then longevity, to be able to cut the line. So Rav Sternbach concludes halacha lemaisa that even though midin shulchan aruch the Talmid Chacham would be entitled to cut the line, the Talmid Chacham should insist that they don't cut the line, and indeed should orchestrate the scenario and the situation to not even be in that position. That's the job of the Talmid Chacham. The job of the tzibur is to give kavod haTorah. We insist that they cut the line nonetheless. Anyway. Even if it costs you money, right? Because he doesn't talk about that there. Correct. He doesn't seem to talk about that door. Yeah. So that, yeah. Good question. A good question. Okay. So now I want to get into. We talked about lines, the order of lines, and lines whether they're all first come first serve, or are there other variables and other rules that regulate and that inform how we treat and our attitude towards lines. Rav Aviner, source 24, page 12. Rav Aviner is the Rav of Beit El in Eretz Yisrael, and he is the Rosh Hashiva of Ateret Kohanim. He is one of the most prolific Talmid HaChachamim of our time. Puts out like a sefer a week. It's unbelievable what's coming out. So he was asked the following. Shailas Rechubas Matzai Protectia Hofeches Lios Chisus. What is the status of protexia, as we've been talking about? This was an interview in a paper with him where they were asking him questions. And they said the following. Be'eretz ein protexia. Everyone knows the joke. Omrim lila b'tichusa. He says everyone knows they have the joke in Israel, which is the following. Be'eretz ein protexia. Ki mishi ish lo ksharm lo tzarech protexia. In Israel, there is no protexia, because if you have connections, you don't need protexia. Whoever wrote that joke should not quit their day job. Uve'etzam, the question is, motel asig avoda otaf kiderech protektia, harikulam osim kacha. Is it permissible to get a job using protektia? Someone calls the rabbi and says, you're well connected, you know the head of the hospital, you know someone who made a donation to the university, you know the person who runs the cheder, you know the person who's the manager at the assisted living facility. Can you get somebody I know in, or can you get someone I know, can you get me a job? Right, so Rav Aviner, kodem kol masharabim tovanim akol minei dvar masurim kulam osakacha, taina ze kocha ula yafe kedei lahakel lefamim al onesh lefnei beis mishpat, o kedei lahamid panim befnei bnei adam, aval yeina mishana shum davar, im isnagos misyemes eina yishara. Says Rav Aviner, the old, if your friends jumped off a building, but the fact that everyone does it is meaningless. Maybe that can find you favor, the judge will be more lenient, because he says you're not such a egregious individual, you were just doing what everyone does. Maybe it will help you find favor with a judge. And maybe in the court of public opinion, people will look more favorably upon you because you're not such a terrible person, you just did what everyone does. However, klapei shmaya, in the world of the Olam HaEmes, from the perspective of the Ribono Shel Olam, the fact that everyone does it helps gornisht. It's meaningless. There's right and there's wrong, and we have to do what's right, and we should care less if everyone is doing what is wrong. Shainis number two, Bofen Pashut, Yesh Lassas L'Chalachar Osa Sikra L'Kabal Avodah Tafgid B'li Protectia. The moral and ethical thing to do is, we should live in a merit-based world. The one who has the merit should get the job. The one who has the merit should get into the institution. The one who has the merit should get ahead. Should be a merit-based world. And in a world where there's protexia, we've essentially inserted shochad, that we look at so negatively, we're allowing the world to operate in a corrupt manner. Shochad is the epitome of corruption, and protexia is the epitome of shochad. Essentially, you have a connection and you're leveraging it. You're exploiting it. So the person asks, "Az yasura, that's asur? Protexia husug shoshochad. Shochad utashla manita mechashay lenosei tafkid, kedei sheyifo b'chivu mesuyam." What is shochad? Bribery is I give you something so that you look more favorably, and that's what protexia is. Leveraging or exploiting that connection. And the Gabei Dayanim, because the Pa'amayim B'Torah Sh'asu Lakacha Shochad. We have twice in the Torah, Shmos and Dvarim, you're not allowed to. Shochad Gam Yachol Lo B'Kesev Al B'Tovas Ben Chaverim. We saw last time that Shochad, bribery, is also violated, not only with money or material goods, bribery can also be with other types of favors or benefits. Mesupar B'Gemar Sh'Shmuel Avar Pa'am Al Gesher, Ba'adam Achav V'Nasan Lo Yad L'Sayo, Ba'avro Al Gesher, Amar Lo Ma'asecha Pa, Amar Lo Din Yesh Lifanecha, Pasal Ani L'Chal Din. Remember we saw? Shmuel had to cross the river. Someone said, give me your hand, let me help you so you don't slip and crack your head open. He said, by the way, what are you doing here? I'm here for a Din Torah. Or you're the litigant and you just helped me cross it? I can no longer be your Dayan. I've just received bribery. Bribery, because he made sure he didn't slip and crack his head open? Shmuel said, yeah, that's pretty good bribery. Because I now will look at you, it's not equal the way I'm looking at the other litigant. You did a favor. To you I have what we call a debt of gratitude. You did something for me, and I feel a debt towards you, and that debt will skew my judgment, and therefore it's unfair. So bribery is not only violated with money or with material goods or possessions, bribery can be violated with other types of things. And says Rav Aviner, protexia is a form of bribery. You have an in, you have a connection, the other person feels they owe you a favor, they owe you an outcome. So that is a form of bribery.
In a judicial system, your expectation is to have fundamental fairness, and to have a completely disinterested party that's making judgments. In the world that Rob, and I love Rob Abimer, but the world he's talking about, the whole principle of how it functions is there's a clash of people with various interests.
Right.
And it's resolved because everyone has representatives, in essence, of their interests. And if you want to act like a friar, that's very nice. But your family is suffering because you're not fighting
good
in the way you're supposed to.
Good. So we're going to continue to see. Rav Aviner represents one perspective. We're going to see, and then we're going to see some case studies together, which is, of course, always the best way of learning and applying the principles we've learned. So, right. So Lenny's saying, Rav Aviner is describing a utopian society. And if we could draw up a utopian perfect society, we would make one that's based on merit. And we would actually make protexia illegal. It's corruption. We wouldn't allow it. But what happens when you're operating in a world of protexia? So now, if you don't use protexia, you're not doing something noble or righteous. You're actually, in some ways, doing something ignoble and unrighteous to your own family. Because you're allowing, your kid didn't get into the cheder. Because your Zayda refused to make the big fat donation. Because they're a principled person. And they won't make a donation in order to get the ainikel into the cheder. So that's really lovely in the world of utopia. But in the world of the child wanting to get into the cheder, they won't get into the cheder. And again, that's one example. I wish it were a hypothetical. It could not possibly be more real. So Rav Aviner is at least beginning by telling us about the ideal society, because if not, does Torah not strive to create a morally ideal society, and even if it then responds to it functioning in a less than ideal way? Yeah?
Does a sick person go before the Talmud Chacham?
Does the sick person go before the Talmud? We didn't see it on the list. We didn't see it on the list. Again, any Talmud Chacham worth their weight in Torah would of course defer. Okay, let's continue with Rav Aviner. I want to get through. We have a lot of material to cover. He continues. Skip down the next one. Haim Zed Din Rak Lagabe Shocha Lihudim Velo Lagoyim. So he writes, Isra Matan Shocha VeKabalasa Misyaches Gam Lagoyim Mishum Shegam Bnei Noch Nitztavu Ol Adinim. As we saw for the Ramban, the Chassam Sofer, the Pesachei Tshuva, non-Jews are also. So in other words, lest Jews of the diaspora say, among my fellow Yidden, I can't use protexia and bribery, but with non-Jewish world, to get ahead with the non-Jews, then I'm allowed to. At Disney, Ruba Margoyim, except Yeshiva Week. So if I go to Disney and non-Yeshiva Week,
where most of the people in Disney are non-Jewish, there I can cut the line, there I can protect you, there I can get some Jewish doctor to write me a note about why I need to get the fast pass on every ride, because on the way to New York my hip hurt, even though when I landed it was healed and recovered. So, lest you think that you can operate that way at Disney Universal, says Rav Avinir, reminding us based on the Ramban, Chassam Sof, Bisrei Tshuva, that the prohibition of protectia of Shochar applies to non-Jews as it does to Jews. Okay. Then he says, Aval lefamim yesh marechas mishchasas ve'ef shalifo rak be'ezra shochar protectia. Aren't there sometimes some terrible, corrupt situations where the only way to operate is with protectia? Well, Lenny was saying, to which Rav Avinir responds, kachaya be'eretz b'mei ha'turkim, under the Ottomans, the Turkish, kvar pasku gedol yisroh shemut lo'ezra shochar kidit shliyasa la'adam aval. So if you're using bribery to get what's justly yours, then in that scenario you can make the argument, a very dangerous and slippery slope, but you can make the argument that that in fact is not corrupt, it's not bribery. A couple of years ago, I went with a small group to Cuba for the day. And we brought with us humanitarian goods for the Jewish Cuban community, whatever's left of it, whatever is real among it. There's an enormous intermarriage right down there. And we had a very comfortable means of transportation to the 30, 40 minute flight to Cuba, and it was packed with medicines and toiletries and all the things we needed. And we landed at this Cuban airport, and there we were in customs, and we're waiting, and we're waiting, and we're talking to them, we're filling it out, and we're waiting, and we're waiting. We're only there for one day, and an hour goes by, and we're waiting, and we're waiting, and we're waiting. And then the host, the person who organized the whole trip, took like a bottle of shampoo and said to the customs guy, "For you." And he said, "Oh, please, welcome to our country. Please, come on through." Right, so for the cost of a bottle of Pert Plus, we were in. And apparently, that's the entrance fee. In other words, in that moment, that was not a violation of Shochad. We could have sat in the airport. We had every right to come. We had applied. The Jewish community wrote a letter inviting us, which would entitle us to the visa. And when we landed, we paid the visa fee and we filled out the form. The only thing that was preventing us from entering was that one of the fees for entering is that you have to bribe, you have to smear the customs guy. With a little Pert Plus, as far as bribes go, that's a pretty benign one, right? It's a pretty comfortable one. Just tells you what life is like there. Spent the whole day, we didn't encounter one roll of toilet paper the whole day in one bathroom we stopped at. So in such a scenario, says Rav Avinir, that's not the protectia, which is shochad, which is corrupt. That is something you're entitled to. The corruption is that you're not being allowed to get it. And this is what you have to do in order to get it. That's not the form of protectio shocha. Turn the page, page 13. What about the fact that in Israel today, Rav Avinir is asked, Nagu rabos lehiskadem ayde protectio. Still many only get ahead using protectio. So says Rav Avinir, yeah, letzareinu. Lachein mutter aval betanai shemishtamshin barak l'roi osa avoda. Oh, so tafkid. So Lenny, this addresses your question. Says Rav Avinir, you're right. When a system is built on protectia, even though that is an incorrect and unethical system or foundation for it to be built on, then what choice do you have other than to operate with it? Bitanai, the condition is you can only employ or exploit your protectia when you deserved it anyway. So in other words, your anicle has straight D minuses. And they're applying to the Ivy League cheder. And really, the merit has no right to get in. And the only way you're going to get in is by naming the base medrash, by naming the dormitory. So that, or by you know someone who knows someone who knows the Rosh Hashiva. That's a protectia, which is incorrect. That's unethical. But if really your grandchild deserves to get in, there's just the whole world. There's a lot of people who deserve to get in, and everyone else is going to use their protectia. And if you don't, your grandchild's going to lose out. Not because they don't have the merit, but because their grandfather decided not to use his connections. Then Rav Avinir says, "Bitanai, in that condition, you'd be allowed to." Skip down. Lachin mutar l'shtamish b'tekzei b'li l'chshosh? Lo nachon. Mutar rakim adam roi l'tafkid v'amarechas abayos v'achshav yos monas mimenu. If you really are deserving, and you really have the merit, and the only thing blocking you is your righteous refusal to use protectia, then you could use it. Aval kolza b'di'evid. Hare am yisrael tzarech liyos mamlechas konem v'goy kadosh. We're supposed to create a model, an ideal society. We are a holy and priestly people. And therefore, people shouldn't look and say, oh, you know the way you get ahead? You know the way you can get around? You know how things work in a shul, in a Jewish community, in Eretz Yisrael? It's a terrible indictment of us. It's a shame on us that we are protectia ingrained so much in how we behave. And he concludes, Masha tzarech la'adrich kol nevchar tzibor b'chol batafkir u'nevuah micha u'masham dorish mimcha kim asos mishpat v'avas chesed and hatznei alechesim elokecha. The Haftorah, the end of Ekev, is it? The beautiful Haftorah of the Navi Micha. Masham dorish, what does Hashem want from us? Not to shuckle harder, not a bigger brim on the hat. What does Hashem want from us? He wants mishpat v'avas chesed atznei alechas amashem. There's nothing wrong with those things too. Shuckle and dress righteously. There's nothing wrong with those things. I'm not mocking them. But ultimately what he wants is a love of chesed and the pursuit of justice and walking with modesty. He doesn't want corruption. So if you allow or enable corruption, even within what seems to be superficially an exceedingly righteous society, it is really entirely unrighteous. And that's Rav Avinir's last reminder. His final word on this is, yeah, Litzareinu, sometimes we have to employ it. You can only employ it when you deserve it anyway. You're just using the protectia to remove the unfair obstacle in your way. That's the only time. But halavai, halavai, we'd be able to create a society which is much more ideal. Rav Shlomo Zalman also weighs in on this. Page 14. I think they're up to the third volume now. I have all three volumes. It's called Valeu Lo Yibol. Valeu Lo Yibol is fascinating. In the first volume introduction, it quotes, there was some guy, I forgot the name, I shouldn't call him some guy, the author of this book, who used to walk Rav Shlomo Zalman home. Rav Shlomo Zalman lived in Shari Chesed, and he davened at the Gra. I had the privilege of davening with him several times when I was in my years in Israel after high school. I would Davka try to daven at the Gra, and Davka try to go to the minyan that he was at, because just to be in his presence was, even in those days, I'm not that old, I'm not nearly as old as I look, and even in those days, which was a short time ago, Rav Shlomo Zalman had no chatzer. There weren't layers of like bodyguards and gabayim and shamashim. You didn't need protectia to get to see Rav Shlomo Zalman. You know what you needed to do? Daven at the Gra. And there he was, and he walked home by himself, and he walked up the steps by himself, and if you wanted to ask a shayla, he was right there. I remember one occasion very fondly, where in the middle of davening at the Gra, the people walk around to collect staka, they shake the whatever, and Shlomo Zalman used to have on his shtender a stack of agurot, and he would give them out. But the aniyim didn't want to take staka from Shlomo Zalman. So I considered a great schus. Once he pointed to me, asked me to come over, he put it in my hand and asked me to give it to the ani to make sure he gave his staka because they weren't letting him give the staka. So it was an amazing thing about Shlomo Zalman that, again, today you want to see a gadol b'Yisrael, you need to know 17 people, make the right donation, look the right way, turn the brim the right direction. You need a million things, right? In those days, Rav Shlomo Zalman, who was the greatest of the greatest, it was anyone who saw him, it was a very, very, very special and holy. His smile was unbelievable. So this guy used to walk home with him from shul and mutcher him with all kinds of shaylas. And then he would take notes, he would scribble notes on all the questions he asked. I'm talking significant questions like medical ethics, business ethics, legal ethics, questions about Eretz Yisrael, land for peace. And he would ask him, is it snias for a boy to wear a short-sleeved shirt? So from Menakotza Elakotza, to which Rav Shlomo Zalman answered him in the first Vamalei Olibo, why are you asking me stupid questions? And he records it. Interestingly, in the introduction, he quotes Rav Shlomo Zalman's family, who asked him not to print the sefer, because they said, this is not a cover for Rav Shlomo Zalman, that these little answers he gave on the walk to and from shul. But he printed it, and he printed it with their comment about printing it, and they're up to, I think, the third volume of it. It's very interesting questions that you can imagine that the type of person who, you know, in the YU based medrash, there are people who surround Rav Shechter at the end of Shacharis. Rav Shechter, if you catch him in the right moment, we'll call them, you know, the nervous people. They're the ones who have to die, always nervous about this, and are you sure, and what's the halacha, and so on. So, this was the following question. B'shvil ha'ashpeiz cholo b'machlakas yodid b'veiz avot, derach kupat cholim, tzarech l'chakos chadashim rabim batur. If you want somebody who is sick and elderly to get access to a bed in the assisted living facility of Kupat Cholim, it's going to take you, socialized medicine, no, this is not a political commentary, we don't endorse any candidates, 501c3, but in socialized medicine, if you want to get into the assisted living facility, or you want to get a MRI, you're going to be waiting a very, 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 very long time. Ach! So this guy in the walk home says to Rav Shlomo Zalman, however, apparently, if you want to get a bed in the assisted living facility, if you want to get into the nursing home, protects you. If you know someone who knows the manager, you know somebody who knows the person, the Kupat Cholim, you're in. So he asks Rav Shlomo Zalman is, can I use my protectia to get my grandmother into the old age home, or does she have to apply kupat cholim like everybody else? If she applies like everybody else, halavai she'll survive long enough to get into the old age home. Or can I use the protectia to get her in sooner? So Rav Shlomo Zalman answered. Now you can understand why they kind of didn't want to print it, because these are not the kind of conversations that... He answers, Zo she'la kasha. It's a very difficult question. With all these issues in Israel, in the world, in Israel, we have these issues. Im lo yu osim b'chla protektia hayachi tov. Aval achshav yesh harbe she'ken mishtam shem b'zeh. So he says, this is a very difficult question. An ideal society would be merit-based, and people would come in order, and would not use protektia. But what could you do? Halavai, you shouldn't have to use it. But this is a very difficult question. That was his answer. That was his answer. It's as if he's not answering, right? In other words, Rav Shlomo Zalman, who was such a pure neshama, Rav Shlomo Zalman, who was so committed to emes and yashrus, he almost, at least the way it's recorded here, he could not bring himself to say, yes, use protectia. But he also couldn't bring himself to say, yes, she should not get into the home because everyone else is using the... That's how I read it. It's almost as if he can't bring himself to say, use protectia. He also can't bring himself to say, don't use protectia. So essentially he says, Taka, that's a very good question.
By the way, President Trump used those rules for 501c3.
Okay, we're still not endorsing any candidates yet. Yes.
Most of the quote prestigious unquote yeshivas,
yes,
have a category of legacy jesus.
Right.
Zaidi and everybody does. Zaidi.
Sure.
And so if your last name is Burr, you get into Long Beach.
Okay, good to know. What if it's Goldberg?
I can make the call. But no, I mean, is that legitimate?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So again, most institutions of higher learning, be it Torah or Lahavdil, secular, so alumni, legacy families have a greater likelihood to get in. My daughter just applied to Michala, and she happened to mention, she got in Baruch Hashem into other schools, she has this big decision to make, and she happened to mention, oh, did I mention that my two older sisters and my mother and five aunts all went to Michala? She got in on her own merit. If nobody ever went there, she would have gotten it. But yeah, so why does that work, by the way? Why does that work? Because of such loyalty and allegiance to the family of legacy? No. Because the development office is talking to the admissions office. And the development office says that the matriarch and patriarch of the family are going to cut a bigger check in the development office when more of their family go to the same institution. So it's not a hakara satov, thank you for trusting us with your older daughters, we'll take the next daughter. It's thank you for trusting us, we'll take your check and the next daughter. So it's really driven by development. So there is an element of protectia. So what do you have to do? So should you pretend that you aren't related to those other people to avoid the protectia that comes from it? Again, the ethics of it are very unclear. I want to go on to the next case study. What I would say is that's a shiloh for the admissions office. Can they show favor? And I would answer that the admissions office can't show favor based on legacy unless all are equal. So two applicants present themselves equally. Both have 4.0 GPA. And both were GO president. And both starred on drama. And both play the clarinet. And both go to old age homes every Sunday. And both, okay, so everybody's equal. Who should we take? This one's family's all come here before, so we have some Hakar Satov. Maybe then we can include that variable in. But if this one has all the Milas, and this one has all the Chesronus, but the one with all the Chesronus also has siblings with all the Milas, there's an injured party. And the injured party, the victim, is the one who deserved to get in or didn't get in. Just because the development office is talking to the application office. Let's go to the next example. And now we're going to conclude today. We'll have to probably finish this Mirza Shem next time. But the Chashukei Chemed, Rav Zilberstein. Rav Zilberstein is a son-in-law of Rav Yashiv Zatzal, a brother-in-law of Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and a great Rav in Bnei Brak, a great posek, and also from a very different part of the Torah world than Rav Aviner, but I would argue one of the other extraordinarily prolific authors. His Sfarim come out, in fact, I subscribe to and get comes out, I haven't seen it in a little while, it's supposed to come out monthly, called Vavai HaAmudim. It's a PDF that comes in the email, which is essentially an entire sefer of fascinating shailas. He's a big Talmud Chacham, a very Leibedik Talmud Chacham, and he has fascinating, fascinating shailas. One of the experts in medical halacha, I believe he's the postdoc of Maneha Yeshua Hospital. He's a fascinating individual. Rav Zilberstein. Maybe someday we can bring him part of the Beis Medrash program. Who knows? So Chashuk Echemet is great. In fact, there's now, I think, three or four or more volumes that Chashuk Echemet questions that have been translated into English. It's a series put out by Art Scroll called What If? I don't get a commission on any of this. It's put out by Art Scroll. It's called What If? I think they have three volumes for Shabbos, one volume for Yontif already. And the What If are great Chashuk Echemet questions organized by Parsha. So they took, the Chashuk Echemet is organized by Masechta, but they took and organized by Parsha, and it's put out based on the Parsha. And we, very often at my Shabbos table, will pose the question, and then we go around, and everyone offers their answer, and we see what the Chashuk Echemet answers. It's a wonderful sefer in the Hebrew or the English. So I found from many, many of his volumes on Shas, the following questions that all revolve around our issue of waiting in line, protectia, bribery, and so on. So here it is. Chola zakuk lavor hashtalas kliya. So you have a sick person who's waiting for a kidney transplant. Hatur shalom amtina lishtalas kliya arach ma'od. The kidney transplant line, the organ transplant line, is extremely long. So someone waiting for a kidney transplant in order to live finds themselves number 7,252 on the kidney transplant line. And the chances of their surviving, even with dialysis, until they would get their new kidney, are very small. So, pikuach nefesh is docha everything, wants to live. So he says, I'll tell you what, I'll make the right size donation. I'll bribe or use protectia to whoever it is who runs the kidney, the organ transplant bank, and I'll knock myself up to number 10, to number 5, to number 1, get that kidney transplant, Shalom Yisrael, Pikuach Nefesh. What are the ethics of trying to advance someone on a line for a life-saving procedure, kidney transplant, organ transplant, who was already falling far back in the line? That's the question. So let's see what Rav Zilberstein answers. Each of these questions obviously can be long topics on their own, explored in depth, but want to extract from it in context of what we're studying together. Tshuva Nemar Bab Matzia, he says, points us to the Gemara Bab Matzia Samach Beishnaim Shnei Mahalchem Bederach Ubiyad Echad Mehem Kiton Shamayim Im Shosan Shnei Mesim Im Shosan Echad Mehem Agil Yishuv. So what happens the following scenario? This happened last year. I used it in a drasha, a story. Parents with their son were going through the desert, I think in Arizona. And it was extremely hot, and they got lost and lost contact, and they had one thing of water, and the parents gave it to the child who drank the water and survived, and the two parents died. That scenario that we all know as the hypothetical, unfortunately, Rahman al-Islam, happened in, I think it was in Arizona last year. So the following question, two people are walking in the on the desert, and one of them has a canteen, has a bottle of water. If they both drink it, they split the water, they will both surely die. If one of them drinks the water, he will live, but the other will surely die. So Ben Petura's conclusion was, how could someone watch and witness the death, the demise of another, because at their expense, because they drank the whole thing, split it. And maybe a miracle will happen, you'll both survive, and even though we don't rely on miracles, and the likelihood is you'll both die, you can't stand to watch somebody else die because of you, split it. Even if it means you both give your life. Achabo, Rabbi Akiva came and he learned, V'chayachicha imach, chayecha kodman, l'chayecha avrecha. The Pasuk in Vayikra says, V'chayachicha imach, that we have an obligation, responsibility, a mandate to protect and preserve and prolong the life of another, but imach, with you. If trying to protect and preserve their life is at your expense, then chayecha kodman, your life comes first. So says Rabbi Akiva, by the way, it can't be that you both own the water. Then that's not the question. The question was, you own the water. Should you share your water and you'll both die? Should you give the other the entire water and you'll give up your life? It's quite a hesped they'll say about you. Or should you drink all the water even though it means the other will die? So I would have thought, like Ben Petura, before Rabbi Akiva came along, I would have said, you know, you're going to have a lot of survivor's guilt. You're going to drink the whole bottle of water and know that the person dehydrated right in front of you. They dropped dead in front of you because they couldn't survive without the water. And there you are, smacking your lips, all thirst is quenched. You drank the whole bottle of water. Says Rabbi Akiva, yeah. Not only do you not have to share it, it would be against halacha to share it. You have no right. Your first responsibility and your first obligation is to yourself and to your survival. Because of a chazanish, says the chazanish niradeh. V'niradeh en chaverish arligzo mimena meimav. Now, can the other one steal your ketone of water? Maybe the other person has the right to steal your bottle of water. Why? Pikuach nefesh. Pikuach nefesh is docha, everything but the three big three. And gzela is not one of the big three. So maybe you can steal in order to save a life. This was known, there was a great German philosopher named Heinz, and this was known as the Heinz Dilemma. Did we ever do it in the afternoon, Kolo? We've, in the past, explored the Heinz Dilemma. The Heinz Dilemma was that there was a pharmacy that carried a drug that was exorbitantly and prohibitively expensive for a person whose wife suffered a certain ailment. And if she didn't have access to the drug, she would surely die. And the Heinz Dilemma was, what are the ethics of breaking into the pharmacy to steal the drug in order to save your wife's life? Are you allowed to? And it's a fascinating sugya that has to deal with rodef and nirdaf, and maybe the pharmacies of the rodef because they could save and they're not saving, and perhaps one can extrapolate about current pharmaceutical protocols and pricing and regulations and so on. Is there a din of rodef? And what is the halacha? Matzel atzma b'mamon chavero. Can you save yourself with someone else's money? And according to some opinion, absolutely you can, but you have to pay them back. You're allowed to steal it to save the life, but it doesn't exempt you from having to compensate, from having to pay back. But would you believe that there's an opinion that says you're not allowed to? Why? I thought it wasn't one of the big three. And it says, yes, it is one of the big three. Stealing from someone is an avizrayu of ritzicha. It's as if you've killed them. Why? Because the way that we live and survive is through our resources, is through our money and our means. If someone takes everything you have, they could potentially cost you your life. Ani chashiv kames. A poor person is as if they're dead. The whole story of Esav and Eliphaz and Yaakov. Exactly. So poor person is already considered to be dead. Moreover, what do we call, what does the Gemara call money? What's the word for money? Damim. Why is it called damim? Because you put your blood, sweat, and tears. And because it is what prolongs your damim, your life. The money is what you're able to sustain yourself with. If someone steals from someone else, maybe that's a form of ritzicha. So anyway, the Chazanish says when it comes to here, maybe you'll say the two people are traveling in the desert. So there was a story that several people have made famous. I shared it a few years ago in Shul, and then Rabbi Krohn wrote it up, and Rabbi Jonathan Rosenblum wrote it up, and then a video was made by our friend Rabbi Gold of my wife's grandfather, who was previously married with a child before the war and had secured visas to be able to come to America, and until the time came to be able to use them, had hid those visas. And when he went back to retrieve them to be able to take his family to safety, his in-laws as well, they were gone. And there was only one person in the whole world he had told where they were, and that was his old chavrusa and best friend, who had taken those visas to be able to rescue his own family. His family survived, and my wife's grandfather lost his first wife and his child and his in-laws, and he himself had to survive Auschwitz, all because those visas were stolen. And the extraordinary part of the story is that he never told anyone until later in life. He passed this older man at visiting day once, my wife's visiting day in camp as a child, and my father-in-law asked him, who is that? And he said, someone I knew growing up. And he said, how did you not say hello and embrace him and catch up, and why weren't you excited to see him? And he said, whatever, no reason, we don't talk. And my father-in-law pushed him and pushed him until he told him this story. And my father-in-law couldn't believe, how were you able to just walk by him? You didn't want to tackle him? You didn't want to kill him? This man cost you so much? And he said, it was a different time, and people did whatever they had to do to survive, and maybe I shouldn't have even put him in that position to tell him where I hid those visas. And it was an extraordinary story of the ability to be mevater, the koach to be able to move on. They didn't decide he was going to be friendly with this man, but the ability to be able to move on nonetheless. It was an extraordinary story. Yoel Gold made a beautiful video out of it. But that's what the Chazanish says. Maybe the one who does not own a canteen of water will say to himself, you know, this so-called friend of mine, look, it's survival of the fittest over here. We're walking through the desert, and he's only one bottle of water, and only one of us is going to make it out on the other side, or at least let us share it and see if one of us, if both of us can make it, maybe he should be entitled to steal it. Says the Chazon Ish, no, Osir. Why? Even though the halacha is that in the case of the pharmacy, I would paskin in the Heinz dilemma that you can break in and you can steal the drug. You'll have to pay it. Spend the rest of your life paying it back. But if your wife, if a person's wife, God forbid, needed that drug to survive, you'd be allowed to break in to steal it and you'd have to pay it back. Why? Because there, the drug doesn't belong to anyone in particular. It's the drug company or the pharmacy's drug. But here, the psak has already been given that chayecha kodman. So in other words, the Torah's position is, whoever owns the water gets the water, chayecha kodman. Which means that the other person, if they steal it, is not stealing and saving his life with someone else's money. He's stealing and saving his life with someone else's life. And that you're not entitled to do. Who says one person's blood is redder or thicker than another? So you're not allowed to save your life by killing the other person, and that's what you'd be doing if you steal it, therefore you can't.
What was the
maskan
on the transport?
Well, let's get back. So therefore, the same thing here. If you try to advance yourself on the organ transplant list, on the line, and you knock someone else further down the line because you stole their place, you have saved yourself at the expense of the life of another. Even in an effort to save your own life, even though it's pikuach nefesh for you, you're not allowed to achieve a pikuach nefesh. You can't say you can save your life with someone else's money, but you can't save your life by sacrificing someone else's life. And in order to get that organ transplant, you're going to knock someone else further down the list. That saving your life for someone else's life is not allowed. So all that was the Chazon Ish, but comes Rav Zilberstein and he says, our case of the organ transplant list is not analogous to the case of the one bakbuk of water owned by one of the pea parties going through the desert. Why? Because going through the desert where one of them owns the water is their water. And you're taking it as costing them their life. But here, this is a list. A list is an imaginary thing. The other person doesn't actually have that kidney yet. It doesn't belong to them yet. It hasn't been translated. You haven't cut them open and taken out their kidney. You're not saving your life by killing another. You're just manipulating where you want on the line. And a line is different than taking the water. In other words, what would be analogous is that you take their right to the line for the water. You cut them at the water fountain line. That's the analogy to the organ transplant list, not to taking the water itself. When you cut a line, you haven't stolen, you are just doing something that's not righteous. So therefore, Zobershin says, maybe it's fundamentally different than the case of making your way through the desert. Venira, I just want to finish this. I feel bad we've already gone over. But I just want to finish this and we'll pick up with our case studies next week. Let's say you have a doctor who works in the government and is in charge of the organ transplant list, and he now wants to advance his wife or his child or his father or his mother. They should not let their loved one cut the list, but if they did, they don't get fired as a result. Because they've not actually stolen a life. Ela Genevas Tour, they've stolen a spot on a line. And a spot on a line is different than stealing a life. And today you can go to Chutz La'aretz, and I don't know whether this is accurate or just in his imagination, but you can get organs in Chutz La'aretz at every Walmart and Target, apparently. At least Rav Zilberstein is under the impression that they're much more available in Chutz La'aretz than can. So when you stole their place in line, you haven't stolen their life. Maybe you stole some money, because now they have to spend money to leave Israel. And now it's not part of their socialized medicine that they get their automatic kidney. They got to go to China and buy a kidney. So now you cost them money, because they got to go to China and buy a kidney, but it's not exactly the same.
And then he ends with another scenario, but we're already late, so we'll pick up with that. Amir Tashem next time. Have a great day.